We're going to go into extra innings today on this interview because I still have a lot of questions I'd like to ask and ground I want to cover. And since we're on the subject of students, Joan, jump in here because it's not just Michigan Tech students that are involved with Lake Superior. You do a lot of work with local high school students as well. And how does it go down to middle school and elementary school?
Oh, absolutely. Right, K to 12. It's kind of like thinking of it as you need to build the program, and we like to introduce them in the elementary ages. By middle school and high school, we'd like to have them out on the Agassiz. We'd like to have them involved in summer camps and working in research as they're interested. So having this Great Lakes Research Center is really going to allow us to expand the programming that we've offered and actually bring people on site. For the most part, our programming has always been going to the schools, which has been very successful, but the Great Lakes Research Center offers an amazing opportunity for students to really hook them into learning about science and engineering. I wanted to build a little bit on what Marty Auer started by saying, that the Great Lakes Research Center has a real public face, and we do invite people as we gear up over the next year or two, to just come to the building and see some of the many things that are offered specifically for public education. For example, we're planning to have a Science on a Sphere, which is a really cool way to see data from around the world, and to have video cameras that'll show, that will be on the Agassiz, that could show research taking place. We're going to have a geo wall, which these guys could tell us more about. The labs will have windows so that they can actually look into the labs and see the research that's taking place. Outside around the building are a number of gardens that are representing the different plant biomes found around the Great Lakes. In addition, we'll have a rain garden that will be a place that storm water can run off into so that it doesn't run off directly into the portage. And there's also some outdoor research taking place. Our fisheries biologist, Dr. Casey Huckins, is going to have a mesocosm, which means that he'll have tanks where he can raise fish in the natural environment, but also observe and do experiments with them. And also a wetland remediation site where we look at how wetlands can be used to clean water. So there's a lot that's going to be going on both inside and outside of the building that eventually will be signed so that the public can learn alongside the scientists.
Yeah, because when I was there, I saw a classroom.
Yeah, it's coming along.
I didn't see the other stuff yet, so I can't wait for that open house. I'll make sure I'm there too.
Yeah, that'll be great.
Dr. Auer, you said that you use a lot of the data to try to get it into the hands of people that can make laws that can do something about it, that can pass the regulations that you say are needed. This is an election year. Yay. So can you share with us some of those things that you would like to see our politicians carry the torch for, and then we can watch for those things as we begin to vet our candidates?
Yeah. Well, you know, as a scientist who's worked on the Great Lakes for 30 years, I like to hear a candidate's commitment to the environment. And as you know, Noel and I are kind of composites in that we hold both degrees in engineering and I guess yours are all in engineering, aren't they? I hold a degree in science. And so, you know, we don't find ourselves particularly as protectionists, as a do-nothing, turn it all into a museum. But we do demand that when we work on projects in the environment, that the environment get an equal shot at being protected from damage. And so I like to hear a balance in the candidate's perspective. An example in my mind is what President Obama has done with a pipeline in Montana. He hasn't said we're not going to have it. He just said we're not going to have it till we understand what the implications of it are and how we can make sure it doesn't do irreparable damage. So for me, that's the kind of position that I would support, is that we make these decisions based on good science and a thorough understanding before we go forward.
Go ahead.
One of the other big policy issues these days affecting the Great Lakes is the Great Lakes Research or Restoration Initiative that's been going on for the past 4 years. This has funneled millions of dollars into restoring especially polluted hotspots in the Great Lakes, and its funding is up every year for approval by Congress, and that has done marvels for restoring a great number of sites throughout the Great Lakes. So we're very eager to see that program continued.
And that program is appropriately designed to do just what Noel said, and that is to restore the waters of the Great Lakes. But one of the spinoff benefits is that some of the work that's being done there has been handled through universities. And there's been a decades-long trend in government to migrate activity away from the universities and into government institutions like EPA and NOAA. And that leaves us sometimes with a deficit in training young people to get on the lakes and work on the lakes. So as the Great Lakes Restoration Initiative has embraced scientists and engineers in academia, it has also been able to support the involvement of young people who are learning their professions and who will be well-placed to go out there and join the Great Lakes team once they graduate.
The health of Lake Superior is ultimately in the hands of the people that live here. So for our citizens, our residents here in the Keweenaw area and those that live around Lake Superior, what can they do and be mindful of to be able to maintain the health of the lake?
Yeah, there's really quite a variety of things each individual can do that will help the lake. You know, if you're a cottage or cabin owner near the lake, being sure that your septic system is in working order is an important step. Even if you don't live directly on the lake but are on a stream upstream from the lake, that stream carries whatever you discharge into the lake. So being sure that your septic system is working properly is important. Another big issue for Lake Superior, we said, were these airborne pollutants. One of those comes from burning trash. So burning barrels, as we scientists speak of them, which are just these backyard barrels where a number of people still burn their trash, are a major source of contaminants that enter the fish and that are harmful to humans that then consume the fish. So disposing of trash responsibly is another important activity that people can do.
Invasive species get spread by recreational boats, so we really recommend that people wash their boats thoroughly if they're going to be moving between different water bodies. And another big one is shoreline development. It's really important to maintain vegetation and woody vegetation along the shoreline of both the lake, the Portage Waterway, the individual streams, because it acts as a filter to keep pollutants out of the stream. So when folks come in and just remove all that vegetation to get a better view, it just provides a conduit for pollutants to potentially get into rivers and lakes.
And I'd just like to emphasize something I mentioned a little while ago, and that is that when the decision makers, when those in government have decisions to be made, those decisions and even the action of taking up the topic is going to be profoundly influenced by the pressure that they receive from the public. And I believe that if we are going to enjoy the lake, then it's our responsibility to tell the decision makers how we feel about the lake and that we want that thing taken care of. And we're missing out on that a little bit. The public is beginning, I think, to feel that they don't matter, they don't have a word, it's not their job. But believe me, once they know that the people want something done, that's when they start doing it. And you can always contact your state and federal representatives and just let them know, I'm worried about this, I care about this, I hope you have an eye on this, I hope you'll do something about this.
Ballast water regulations are one example of that. So this is an issue where ballast water is the main mechanism for bringing these foreign species to the lakes. And so our controlling and sterilizing ballast water our defense mechanism for preventing invasive species. So for the Coast Guard, for the EPA to recognize, for Congress to recognize that we feel it's important that we don't have zebra mussels in Lake Superior, they need to hear from the people up here. And the people need to say, protect ballast water, regulate ballast water, keep these invasive species out.
There's an issue that comes up. We talk about sustainability. And unfortunately, a lot of what we know about sustainability comes from finding out that things are not sustainable. We shot the last passenger pigeon, and then somebody looked up and said, well, that sure as heck wasn't sustainable, was it? And now we're worried about the Asian carp, and I mean worried about the Asian carp, if you've seen any of the video on that. Why are we worried about the Asian carp? Well, we're worried about the Asian carp because we dug a canal that connected Lake Michigan with the Mississippi River. Now, that was done with good intent for good purposes, but we didn't look far enough ahead to find out what else we might be getting into when we did that. And an appropriate level of research and observation and measure, monitoring and measurement might have told us about that earlier. We got the lamprey, the sea lamprey, that decimated populations of lake trout in Lake Superior before they found an effective control, got here when they opened the Welland Canal and bypassed Niagara Falls. And somebody thought that was great for shipping, and it was, because it opened us to global commerce. But it also opened us to a marine species that came in and completely changed the face of the Great Lakes fishery. So these things are not always that simple, and one of the roles of science is to prefigure outcomes of things before we make those decisions. And then for folks like Joan to carry that knowledge out into the public and build that public support for programs and policies.
Coming up on Saturday the 15th, or Sunday, July 15th, rather, is Lake Superior Day. It's a day of celebration and awareness. So why don't you, everybody, give me tips on how to celebrate and become more aware of Lake Superior Day on that day.
I'd like to encourage everyone just to get out and enjoy the lake, because if you don't enjoy the lake, appreciate the lake, love the lake, then you're not really going to care about its future. So it's really important to love the lake and then do what you can, both in your own, you know, personal lifestyle, as well as Marty has been telling us, is make sure you share your knowledge and concern with others.
Yeah, I would just second that. It's the middle of the summer. Couldn't be a better time to be out on the shoreline of Lake Superior enjoying those nice, cool temperatures, low humidity that everybody else envies us for.
Yeah, it's not 100 degrees. So it's been hot, but it's not been that hot.
I lived in Hancock and Houghton for 25 years. And it would often be about this time of the year when we'd say, you know, we haven't been up to Copper Harbor in 2 years, and we haven't been out to McLean since last June. And there are people from Detroit that are driving 9 hours to get up here and get a breath of that, you know, lakeshore air. And I would live in Hancock and kind of forget all about it. So there is that tendency to not want to, not think to get out and take part in this. Lake Superior sunsets can't be beat, and I encourage people to get out there and celebrate on Sunday.
My guests today have been Dr. Marty Auer and Dr. Noel Urban, along with Joan Chatty, all from Michigan Tech, all who do a tremendous job. Thanks for coming in today.
Thanks
very much.
Don't forget Lake Superior Day, Sunday, July 15th. I'm Rick Allen, Copper Country Today. We'll be right back.